Thank you, Grace. Well, going back several years ago, a church of a dear friend and mentor was embarking on their journey of becoming open and affirming. And this New England UCC congregation was one of the very early embracers of LGBTQ welcome and inclusion. And I remember that during one of the several sessions that the congregation hosted to learn, discover, and discern their inclination toward open and affirming, my friend brought three black and white photos to the gathering, a photo of each of his children when they were around the age of 5. And then he asked the participants if they could identify which of his three children was gay from the photographs. It was a moment of profound awakening in the group. All they could see were three beautiful children. The group all loved and deeply respected my friend Dick, and they could all connect to those photos through their affection for him. This was no longer an abstract exercise about an issue. Suddenly, the issue shifted to real people. In this case, a father who would be personally impacted by the possibility that one of his children would not be accepted fully into the church. Dick felt that his personal testimony helped shift the attitude in those who were struggling with the open and affirming question. As is often the case, we often hold ideas in the abstract. Our sense of right and wrong, black or white, is easily defined from a distance. And I will say there are times when, in order to make a clear-headed decision, we need to step away from the personal emotional tugs which can cloud or confuse our decision making. We can sometimes make very poor decisions based on our emotions. But the converse is also true. Sometimes we need that personal and relational connection to make the right decision. I think of how my life was transformed one summer during an internship by serving as a hospital chaplain at Boston City Hospital. Boston City was a tax-funded hospital in South Boston, serving the most disadvantaged of neighborhoods. From a distance, from a place of privilege, a great many people never get to see just how low-income people struggle. Sometimes people of privilege, people who have the distance of a suburb, make assumptions about people living in disadvantaged neighborhoods. They never take the time to actually get to know the people from those zip codes. Now, when I think about the parable of the two sons in Matthew's gospel, I imagine the first son, the one who initially refused to work in the vineyard and then changed his mind, as the son who did eventually connect emotionally and spiritually with the world. The second son, the one who immediately agreed to go and work in the vineyard, never showed up. He was the one who was living in the abstract. This was the son who wanted to connect emotionally and spiritually with the world, but didn't follow through. We call a person like the second son a hypocrite. These are the people who say all the right things, but when it comes to walking the talk, they fall down. If you and I, if we live sheltered, privileged, and protected lives, we can have all the right beliefs. We can say all the right things. But in the end, having agreed to be disciples of Jesus, we can never quite enter the world where the need is greatest. I recently, this past week, I read an opinion piece in the New York Times titled, "Have Some Sympathy." The author, Pamela Paul, points out that sympathy is getting a bad rap. To offer sympathy used to be something honorable, but lately it's taken on the connotation of poor you. We are now told that we should upgrade to showing empathy. Sympathy suggests distance, whereas empathy suggests really trying to feel what others feel. Pamela Paul points out that the word sympathy has been in use since the 16th century. The prefix S-Y-N, it comes from Greek language, and it means with compassion. Empathy, the word empathy, on the other hand, shows up in the 20th century, and it gained a lot of popularity in psychology. The prefix EM comes from German, into. So Pamela Paul found that advocates who prefer the idea of empathy say that sympathy is saying, too bad you're in a hole, whereas empathy is getting into the hole too. But too much emphasis on empathy has its problems. A concept called standpoint theory argues that one's view of things is always linked to our experience. In some instances, you cannot know exactly what others feel. You can't do it, because you have not been there yourself. So don't try to empathize. Don't try to empathize because you can't when it comes to certain things like injustices or things like extreme poverty if you've been well off your entire life, or empathizing with certain kinds of tragedies you have not experienced yourself, like being treated for severe cancer or losing a son or daughter. You can't empathize, but you can become sympathetic. And in becoming sympathetic with the plight of others, you can then offer compassion. Now, during my chaplaincy at Boston City Hospital, I had a very sage supervisor. He required me, and he required all my colleagues, to experience the community around the hospital. So we were charged with actually walking the streets of South Boston and Roxbury. I'd say a 2-mile radius, including Dorchester. And we were told that we needed to interview the locals. We needed to frequent the businesses. We needed to get involved in a local church. And so we did. And it was one of the most eye-opening experiences of my life. Getting into the world, or as Jesus might say it, getting into the vineyard, probably won't engender empathy, but it can move you and I and others to sympathy and hopefully a move towards some compassion. You see, we live very isolated lives, and our culture is bearing the brunt of that. I had a friend, I lived up in upstate New York, and he was telling me one day that he didn't know any of his neighbors. He'd lived there for, maybe 5 years. Because everyone had a garage, right? Everybody drove in and went right in through the garage. They might wave at a neighbor mowing their grass, but he said, I really don't know my neighbors. It would be interesting. It would be interesting for members of this congregation to walk a 1 or 2 mile radius around St. John's, talk to some of the shopkeepers, some of the homeowners, some of the community leaders, to learn about the vineyard that grows around this building. It might be eye-opening. It might allow for some mission ideas we have never considered. It might be energizing, challenging. It just might renew our spirits. It might allow St. John's to grow in becoming more sympathetic and compassionate. Like that first son, who initially said no, but actually ventured into the vineyard, for him it became a moment of profound discovery and revelation about what God is up to and who God is there for. Matthew mentions people like tax collectors and prostitutes, people that we would ordinarily not want to be around. The second son never made it into the vineyard. Oh, he talked a good game. He talked like a faithful person. But he stayed at arm's distance, never developing that love for the world, never seeing things as God sees them, never growing a heart of sympathy and compassion. God asks us to join the world. Most people are very fond of the Bible verse, God so loved the world. It does not say God so loved the church. Though God's affection for the church is real, and God's affection for God's people is great, it says God so loved the world. It's the whole world that God is after. And that is good news. Amen.